Anyhow, this is the Taylor Report, and if I could sing, I would do the music. But we're going to be talking shortly with Tom Moran. I'll explain again that Tom Moran is a Texas lawyer, and he is one of those who was volunteered to defend a client who were these accused at the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda were I hate this, I don't know, the word for it is they were anathematized. And so I applaud all the lawyers who came forward. Charles Roach in this city was one. David Jacobs was another. The great Ed Medveen, who has passed on, and I don't know if our listeners know that, but he was co-counsel with Ramsey Clark in the defense of Eliza Van Dakarudamana. A brilliant former prosecutor from California devoted himself to fighting capital punishment cases. Perhaps that's why he took this case. There are lawyers. Chris Black comes to mind. People might remember Chris Black. We've been on this show, and we hope to be talking to him again soon. But they went into a situation where there was a, I hate to say it, a presumption of guilt, not a presumption of innocence. This whole thing needs to be closely reviewed in terms of what transpired. But Tom Moran, together with Cynthia Klein, his co-counsel, fought this case starting in 2003. That's when they went to court. They were prepared before that. Mr. Mugireneza was apprehended in 1999 in Cameroon. And they took over and went through a battle which only ended in 2013. Now, there were four accused in the case. They were called, and I really want to know who gets to name things. It's always a good question, you know, that if we talk about currency and they say, should so-and-so be on the currency? Who decides? So at the tribunal, they decided to call these four accused the Government 2 case. And I may ask Tom Moran to help us on explain where the labels come from. But because there was also a Government 1 case. Now, the Government 1 case involved three individuals. And what makes it striking is that for me, listeners will know I worked as an investigator for the defense, is that none of the three who were called Government 1 were members of the government. These are after the events of 1994 when there had been a war between April and July 1994. There was a leadership in the country who was called the interim government, and these individuals were listed as Government 1. I never had it explained to me how you could be in Government 1 if you weren't in government. But I think we have Tom Moran with us now. Are you there, Tom?
Yeah.
Hey, Tom, thank you very, very much. I'm really glad to be talking to you. I've just explained that you took over the case. You're from working from a lawyer in Texas. You became the counsel for Prosper Mugireneza. And yep. At the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, and a trial was held in Arusha. You went to trial in 2003. In 2013, you came away with an acquittal for your client, which to me was really very laudable work. I was very impressed. I was actually had the privilege to be in the courtroom, watch some of it. But I'm afraid we have to start with the ending rather than the beginning, because this is 2016 and your acquitted client has not yet been permitted to leave Tanzania to return to his family. And can you start by talking about that? I mean, you did win. You want your client to go home.
Well, Prosper's family is in France. In fact, they're all French nationals now. And the French government won't let him in. Last year, Prosper's son died in France, and Prosper wanted to go to the funeral. the Tanzanian government gave him a travel document guaranteeing that they'd let him re-enter Tanzania. And the UN tried to get the French government to give him a visa for like 72 hours. The French embassy in Tanzania and presumably the foreign ministry in France, in Paris, just messed around so Prosper couldn't go to his own son's funeral. It's cruel.
Cruel, and maybe, I guess we could add that word everybody likes, very unusual. This is the United Nations tribunal. I pull my hair out when I think about this. Did they fob off, by the way, responsibility? I understand, and France's behavior is obviously despicable in this case. He's an acquitted individual. But why does, when they set this tribunal up, why wasn't this matter clearly resolved? They're going to have people acquitted. Tom Moran is going to show up with Cynthia Klein and get the man off. So where are you going to put him when he gets off?
Well, when the Security Council created the two tribunals, apparently they never figured anybody would ever be acquitted, and nobody would ever serve out a jail term. Right now in that safe house in Arusha, there's, I think, 10 acquittees and about 6 people who have done their time and been released. They've got no place to go. The only country that's got to take them is Rwanda. And they're terrified of going back to Rwanda for very good reasons. When Prosper and his co-defendant, Justin McGinsey, were acquitted in 2013, there were riots in the streets of Kigali protesting. If those guys went back or were sent back, there'd be a rash of traffic accidents, heart attacks, and people slipping on soap in the shower and breaking their necks.
But it is that thought is being entertained, is it not?
Pardon me?
That idea, I understand, is kind of broached occasionally. I've seen a few documents. It's that they say, well, there's one country that they could return to. It's their country, and therefore they should go. But my goodness, when they removed your client from Cameroon, he was there. I'll ask you, what was his status in Cameroon?
He was a refugee.
And so wouldn't he still be a refugee? I mean, he's exactly who he was when he was picked up.
The Cameroonian government doesn't want him back. He's petitioned, he and others have petitioned the UN High Commission for Refugees for aid. They're still waiting for answers to their requests. You know, there are some people that just become refugees. And the guys that are acquitted, you know, they went through a lot to get acquitted. In the government two trial, which was four ministers, Minister of Health, Foreign Minister, Minister of Trade, my client, Prosper Mugweneza, who was a Minister of Civil Service, the trial and appeals lasted about 10 years, a little less than 10 years. And hundreds of witnesses were called by all parties, and the prosecution didn't get a single conviction on a single count. It probably cost the United Nations millions for that trial. Oh, it clearly cost them millions. When you consider everything from the salaries for the prosecutors and the stenographers and the judges and the defense lawyers and... And the prosecution just put together a bad case. They couldn't prove it. Back in 2002 or 2003, before I got involved in the case, all four of them were offered time served. And all four of them turned it down. There's some serious wasted talent sitting in that safe house in Arusha.
Yes.
Because they had the nerve to do what they thought was right.
By the way, that was, you talk about nerve, to turn down time served when the whole world expects them to be strung up, figuratively speaking.
They had more guts than I do. I'd have taken in a heartbeat.
This is spoken like a true criminal lawyer.
Well,
this is Tom Moran, by the way, and his co-counsel was a really hard-working, I remember Cynthia Klein, was that you both, my gosh, you invested a lot of time. You must yourself feel they owe you or something here, particularly some respect for your client after you've done that. I mean, have you ever thought about, I mean, I understand Mr. Sechel, is that his name in Yugoslavia? He's trying to sue people for the time they took away from him.
Well, Prosper has made a claim through another lawyer, Prosper and McGinsey, against the UN, but that's never succeeded. It won't succeed in this case. Mm-hmm. If it were up to me, I'd give them what a person who is wrongfully convicted in Texas gets. Mm-hmm. $80,000 a year for every year he's in the penitentiary, plus state health insurance for state employee health insurance for the same time he was in the penitentiary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That seems fair.
You can't give him his son's life, the life at the time he lost with the son. My memory is that during the time he was incarcerated while you, Cynthia, and others fought for him, he had hardly any access to his family, and didn't he have a son that he hadn't even seen?
He wasn't able to visit or something? He's visited all the children visited, and his wife's visited several times. She visited once when she was a witness. That was, I think, his first visit with his wife in like 10 or 11 years. And his children, he got to see not all together. And then, like I say, one of his sons has died. It's a terrible waste of a human being. When I think of the people that are in that safe house, it's a waste of talent because the UN never thought about what are we going to do when it's over. It was easy at the Yugoslav Tribunal. My client at the Yugoslav Tribunal, Hazan Delic, was a Bosnian national, and he went back to his hometown. And another one of the co-defendants in that trial, Pavel Music, was Croatian. And when he was freed, he went back to Croatia. In World War II, the Germans, when they were freed, went to Germany. And in fact, a lot of them were all over Europe.
I've seen a photograph of four who were acquitted early in the Nuremberg trial, and they were sitting at a folding table smoking cigarettes and drinking coffee, talking to reporters.
Well, after they were acquitted by the International Military Tribunal, all four of them, was it four? Yeah. All four of them were tried by the German courts, the German denazification courts, and did some time. But there were also the subsequent tribunals. There were a lot of people were acquitted or did their time and were released. Some of them went to one right off the top of my head. I was originally given the death penalty and for just horrible crimes. He's an SS officer. Was commuted to life. And then he was freed in the 50s, and he moved to France.
The same France that will not have your client.
Well, His co-defendant, Casimir Bizimungu's parents, or family rather, are in Montreal. Mm-hmm. They're Canadian citizens now, as I understand it. And even though he's acquitted, the Canadian government will not consider admitting him by law. He's been trying to get with his family in Canada. And Casimir's a doctor.
Yes.
I'm sure that you can use it. He's a pretty darn good doctor.
Yes, he was quite well known for as a skilled doctor, as a surgeon, yes.
And you know, I'm sure that you can use an obstetrician gynecologist in Montreal.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there have been a few that have found, been reunited with their families. Interestingly enough, another obstetrician, another minister, was relocated to Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
But those are all, it's the...
Those are the exceptions, yes.
It's like lightning striking. At some point, all those guys are scared to death that at some point the UN is going to get sick and tired of paying for their housing and feeding them and taking care of their medical care, and they're going to say sayonara.
Yes.
Safe house closes at 10 o'clock tomorrow morning. Get your stuff out of here. Have a good day.
Yes.
They are terrified of that.
Well, and by the way, isn't there's a foundation for that. You and I both know or remember that when Mr. Baraguita was ordered released by the UN tribunal, by the appeal court, the highest court, they kept him. And eventually, because of the intervention, particularly of the government of Kigali, they went ahead and tried him, even though he'd been ordered released because of the way the case had been managed.
The appeals chamber reversed its decision releasing him. Mm-hmm. The reason they gave was that they had new facts. Some people think that the reason that they reversed the decision was the Kigali government just stopped sending witnesses. Mm-hmm. To the tribunal.
Which they openly said they were not going to cooperate.
And so they backed off. And Baraguita, instead of getting life, the trial chamber said that, or the appeals chamber said that if he gets acquitted, give him money, and if he gets convicted, give him a sentence cut. So he got, instead of life that his co-defendants got, he got 35 years. Now, when you're in your 60s, that doesn't make a whole lot of difference.
No, Mr. Baraguita is dead.
And Baraguita is likely to die in prison in Mali.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's where he's at.
He died in Benin, yes.
Oh, he did?
Yeah. And, by the way, those prisons, you made the comparison. You're one highly qualified to say so. You worked it both at the tribunal at The Hague and this one. There's been a number of complaints about the quality of the medical care provided, for example, and there have been now, I think, three instances I know of deaths where it's been questioned is whether or not they get the same quality of care as they would receive in at The Hague. I don't know if you have an opinion about that or not.
There's also complaints about quality of medical care in The Hague made by the prisoners.
Mm-hmm.
Sechel, who was a prisoner at the ICTY and was acquitted, complained about the health of medical care and, in fact, was allowed to go home
to
Serbia for medical care and refused to come back for his acquittal.
Mm-hmm. He had a unique posture. I know. I never heard of all the defendants. He was the most extraordinary in terms of cooperation, and he ended up with an acquittal.
And I've not read the judgment on that. I don't know why he got the acquittal, but you're right. He wasn't very cooperative. The prosecutor seems to think that the judges misapplied the law.
Mm-hmm.
May very well be. I don't know. But you know, whenever you have a trial, if you can have a fair trial, as opposed to a Stalinist show trial, there's going to be acquittals.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to decide, what are you going to do with these guys that get acquitted?
Oh, by the way, they can't quibble, can they? I mean, forever. This is a situation where I read the statements from their – they always have a spokesperson who disappears after reading something. But he says, we're doing our best, but the states refuse to take them. But that should be a Security Council crisis. They created this. They have to have an appropriate solution. You can't just say – shrug, my goodness. Why do we, this international organization, most prestigious on earth in terms of peace and war, and they this fumbling and they put it on other on states, the buck stops at the Security Council. They created it, and they, seems to me, they owe plenty. And among other things, they owe for creating a court where the presumption was of guilt.
Well, I won't criticize the court because I got what I wanted. But in all seriousness, the tribunal and the Security Council's between a rock and a hard place right now. Mm-hmm. Two of the countries that won't let people in are the United States and France.
Mm-hmm.
They're permanent members of the Security Council. And the French are under tremendous pressure right now to extradite some of the people they've already let in back to Rwanda for trials.
Mm-hmm.
And they've got, I think they've started, what, two trials of cases that were referred to them.
Mm-hmm.
The United States, I don't know if they've had any, if the boys have made any request to the United States, but I won't want to hold my breath until they get admitted as refugees.
Mm-hmm. We're speaking to Tom Moran, who defended Prosper Mugiraneza, and very successfully. Do you have any, are you, Mr. Mugiraneza and his friends there in Arusha, are they reaching out, asking for any particular steps or any pressure on yourself and others what to do if they try to move your client into a situation?
We've tried to do some things, but there's limited things we can do. I can't put pressure on the French government to let him in. And the United States government is not going to put pressure on the French government
mm-hmm.
to let him in. I don't know where they go.
Mm-hmm.
And I frankly feel sorrier for Prosper and the other acquittees than I do for the ones who finish their terms.
Mm-hmm.
The ones who finish their terms are certified war criminals.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you think the trials were fair or whatever, they've been convicted. They've done their time.
Mm-hmm.
But Prosper and McGinsey and Bishop Mpaka and the others are innocent men.
Mm-hmm.
And they just... I guess it's inherent in the criminal justice system. It's... Under some circumstances, people are going to have their lives ruined.
Mm-hmm.
And innocent people are going to have their lives ruined. It's a terrible thing. And at least in the United States, we don't have a mechanism to compensate people. A friend of mine here got an acquittal a couple of weeks ago on a guy that's been sitting in jail pre-trial on a murder charge for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
And he was acquitted. What happened to him? They put him out the back door of the jail and said, don't come back.
Oh, my God.
Everything he had, I'm sure he's lost. He may still have some family around, but if he had a house, that's gone. If he had an apartment, that's gone. A job, that's gone. A car, that's gone. How you deal with innocent people, people who are tried and acquitted, is a difficult question in any criminal justice system. I don't know what they do in Canada when someone's in pretrial confinement and then gets acquitted. Probably the same thing they do in the United States, open the back door of the jail.
Rather similar. It's like a lottery. We have stories that end happily, then most don't. But Tom Moran, I got to thank you again. I thought you did a great job. One thing we can both say is Prosper Mugrenese was found not guilty, and I'm sure he feels, at least in his heart, good about that. It was great talking to you. Thank you very, very much.
We'll see you, Phil. Have a good one.
Okay. Tom Moran, who is co-counsel with Cynthia Klein, and I had the pleasure of knowing him and working with him in Arusha. And take an interest in this matter. This is a terrible, hypocritical moment for the United Nations, and people ought to face up to it. You've been listening to The Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM, and Charlotte, I thank you very much. We'll see you next week.